This edition of The Wellness Prescription is brought to you by Healthy Planet, helping the people of the world to live healthy lives.
Welcome, everyone. This is The Wellness Prescription on 105.9 The Region. I'm Dr. Claudia. Thank you for joining me. My guest today is Sarah Crittenden. She's a social worker at a diabetes clinic at St. Michael's Hospital. She is here to discuss diabetes and the great work of everyone at Diabetes Canada and the collaboration with Aranjo Health Foundation for the Blue Ribbon Gala. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Claudia. I'm really excited to be here and to chat more about what we do here at St. Mike's as well as the gala.
Yeah, I mean, this is a topic that we should be discussing on a regular basis. We should be making everyone aware of, you know, diabetes, what it means to be diagnosed, how do people live with it, and, you know, ways that we can help others cope with the disease. So let's get started. I know that like 1 in 10 Canadians aged 20 years or older have been diagnosed with diabetes. It's more prevalent in men than in women, from what I read. And younger individuals are more likely to be unaware that they have it only because they just don't pay much attention to some of the symptoms that they may be experiencing. So we're going to dive right in. We're going to talk about what are the two different types of diabetes?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people get confused here, right? So it's so important to clarify. There's type 1 diabetes and type 2. The main difference is that in type 1 diabetes, your pancreas does not produce insulin. In type 2, your pancreas does produce a little insulin. However, your body's not using it in the right way. So there's some function and you may not need to take insulin when you have type 2. But with type 1, you absolutely need to take insulin and you will for the rest of your life.
Now, is there a difference in the cause of either type 1, type 2? That's the big question. Yeah.
It's a big question for sure. And I get this one a lot. So I think I know that with type 1, there's a lot of unknown. So I know that's not an inclusive or a conclusive answer. However, there's genetic contributors. There's some potential lifestyle contributors. The short answer is we're not sure, right? Type 2, again, many contributors. And I think there's a big stigma that's important to name, right? So socioeconomic status can contribute to a type 2 diagnosis, diet and lifestyle for sure, but that's not always just the case. There's genetic, there's cultural, there's so many things that can lead to both types of diabetes diagnosis.
How important is socioeconomic status in developing the disease?
Oh, it's huge, Claudia. I see this every day, right? And I think, you know, food banks are struggling right now. And food banks serve affordable, cheap, high carb, high sugar foods, right? And that's just the case, unfortunately. And we're, I think, working to improve things. And I do like to focus on the more hopeful piece. However, there's a massive socioeconomic contributor, especially to type 2 diabetes, for sure.
Okay, now let's talk about your diagnosis. Yeah, and I believe that, and I actually see it. And we know that if you go on Diabetes Canada website, they give you the option of like managing the disease with nutrition.
Yeah.
And I feel like nutrition is always the place to start with any aspect of health and wellness. We have to, you know, start there, if nowhere else. And, you know, we all know that food is thy medicine. So if we're starting with nutritious, wholesome foods, we're avoiding developing certain autoimmune or chronic and comorbid diseases. But once we're diagnosed, what happens then?
Right. So I love that perspective, right? Like, okay, we're here now. Let's focus on what we can do. So with a new diagnosis of diabetes, type 1 or 2, we have a care team here at the hospital, and there's so many wonderful diabetes care teams, both in Toronto and the GTA. So a care team usually consists of an endocrinologist, a diabetes educator, who can be a dietitian or a nurse, someone like myself, a social worker, who can help get access to medications, food banks, grocery delivery for people who can't go out and buy groceries, things like that. And then also, a big part of my role is to talk about the mental health piece. Managing a chronic illness 24/7 is a ton of work. And I see what we like to call diabetes distress every day at my job. which is just that mental load that people have to carry thinking about what they eat and their blood sugar and their movement 24 hours a day.
And that's a very valid point, and one that I'm sure that most listeners and myself don't have to think about. I don't have to worry every day what my blood sugar level is at, because it's not, because it might affect my health detrimentally in that moment. What we do as most humans is, you know, concern ourselves with making sure we're getting nutritious food. But the stress comes when you don't have access to, you know, higher quality carbohydrates that are going like macros, micros, not worrying about that. So there is a stigma with that too, because you're just assuming that they're just making poor choices.
Exactly. That's what it is. And I think too, like I, you know, see a lot of people with both types, and for type one, low blood sugar can be a really scary thing. And so it is important to eat sugar sometimes. Like, we hand out packets of rocket candy here at the hospital. And, you know, I was speaking to a young adult recently who was chatting about how difficult it is to be at the gym and eating candy, right? And the judgment she hears from that, like, but that's like, you have to for your health. So that's a piece too, where I think the general public maybe doesn't know that, right?
Yeah. And that's the part that we want to, you know, bring out into the public so that people understand that the diabetes diagnosis is really about that fine balance between just the right amount of sugar is getting, you know, dumped into our blood system. And it doesn't mean that we're not eating well on purpose. It doesn't mean that we've done something to ourselves to cause it. So you know, people should not be punished for having a diagnosis of diabetes.
No. And like, where I love to focus is that there's so much support for it, right? Like, I mean, here at the hospital, we have an entire clinic dedicated to diabetes, and there's so many across the GTA. And I think, you know, focusing on that hope piece that you can, in fact, live a quote unquote normal life with this autoimmune disease is so crucial here, right? To acknowledge how hard it is, but at the same time, recognize that you will be okay, right? There's no need to have this huge fear that maybe existed more in the past, right? I think we're shifting of all those complications, right? That can happen, but with the right care and support and funding, mm-hmm. they don't need to happen. And they don't as much.
And you just made the key point with all the like proper, you know, research and the funding, we can help people who have a diagnosis of diabetes live even more comfortably than they already are. And diabetes is not something that is, you know, life-threatening at the diagnosis. It has to be properly managed. So can we chat a little bit about how we're managing? Yes, we know diet and nutrition is first and foremost, but what are the other options that somebody with diabetes has to manage their blood sugar?
Absolutely. So I think this is where things get really exciting with technology advancements these days. So when you have diabetes that requires you to take insulin, so both types, you know, if your type 2 diabetes requires insulin, you can use multiple daily injections of insulin where you administer it yourself with a needle, or you can use a continuous glucose monitor for anyone with diabetes. Some people use them when they don't have diabetes, and it's a small patch on your arm that tracks your sugar in real time, which is wonderful. The data there and the advancements in technology, like back in the fall, the Dexcom G7 arrived in Canada, and the data is incredible, right? The advancement is so hopeful. And the Freestyle Libre is publicly funded, which we won't get into the nitty gritty, but there's so many tools, I think, and recognition from the government level that is really good to see. Insulin pumps for people with type 1 who require insulin are devices that give you continuous insulin. And it's amazing how small they are these days. And there's even one in Canada now without tubing. So it's hopeful while still challenging.
Well, Sarah, I'm so thrilled that there are so many options available for individuals who have a diagnosis of diabetes. my question is, does every single person with diabetes have access to these options?
Great question, Claudia. And the short answer is, unfortunately, no. So the government of Ontario, OHIP, right? If you are covered under OHIP, thankfully, there is some coverage, right? So there's a program called the Trillium Drug Program that all people in Ontario who, you know, take medication are eligible to apply for, which is great, right? But it's not the whole cost. And unfortunately, diabetes can be really expensive. So here at the hospital, I see a lot of vulnerable populations and, you know, new Canadians who don't have OHIP yet. I see a lot of people who do have OHIP, but still it's expensive, right?
Right.
Yeah, these technologies are wonderful, but they're not cheap. So there is a gap there, right? And I think that's a big part of the work that I do is to try and make diabetes tools more accessible for people, let alone like exercise programs, right? So people paying for a gym membership or being able to go out for a run or a walk, right? There's a lot of that that I see where people are not able. So that's a big piece of it, right? And again, hopeful perspective is great. Like, you know, awareness is the best. So there's some recognition and funding for sure. And there's lots of wonderful community exercise programs that are affordable and people doing this work. And it's not the worst diagnosis, but it's still hard.
Yeah. And that's a really valid point that I feel like diabetes is no longer the worst diagnosis. I remember, you know, let's say 40 years ago, I mean, diabetes was not common in younger people as much as it was in older people. And it was a hard diagnosis because it was the only option you had was insulin injections. And, you know, I remember it being a little bit more of a scary diagnosis. Nowadays, thank goodness, with all the technology and all the research that we're doing, we realize that we can manage it much better. But the real question, the real problem is getting everyone access to the same advantages and the same benefits of, you know, the gym memberships, educating them on how to be as active as possible, how to not be afraid of the diagnosis.
Right. And I think there's so much fear and stigma around a diagnosis, right? And I think even just things like fear of needles, right? Needles, like no one loves them. And so having to inject yourself multiple times a day with insulin, which is a pretty strong medication, can be scary in itself, right? Like for a young person or for any person.
Now, what are we looking at in terms of cost per month, roughly, if you have an idea? So you're looking at, if you want that, what's it called? The glucose monitor on. I've seen many people with it. That to me looks like it would be a very great tool, but it doesn't look like, doesn't appear to me that it would come without a large expense at the end of every month. So what are we looking at roughly?
For sure. So depends on the type. There's two main types of continuous glucose monitors or CGMs here in Ontario. The Freestyle Libre is the one covered by, you know, public drug coverage programs. And then the Dexcom is the one with tons of really acute data that's amazing. And that one, for example, out of pocket is around $215 a month. So that adds up. Private insurance companies often cover CGMs, which is helpful. And they're working on public. But yeah, it's really tough, and that's no small fee, $215 a month, right?
That's right. Adds up. And then in combining that with like a healthier, you know, diet every day. So that's, it's not inexpensive to eat wholesome foods, like lots of vegetables, enough protein. It is not inexpensive. When we come back, more from Sarah Crittenden on resources and care options for those individuals dealing with diabetes. This is the Wellness Prescription on 105.9 The Region. Stay with us.
Have a question for Dr. Claudia? Call us at 416-335-1059. Tweet us at 1059 The Region or email us info@1059theregion.com. The Wellness Prescription with Dr. Claudia on 105.9 The Region.
You're listening to 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to The Wellness Prescription. Before the break, Sarah and I were discussing the different types of diabetes, type 1, type 2, and we kind of came to the conclusion that regardless of what diabetes you are diagnosed with, we need to bring more awareness to our community. We need to get more resources and get more funding for the research in order for us to help those living with this disease. I thought we'd switch it up a little bit and talk about how important is networking in this community, in our community, for helping people deal and cope with diabetes.
Oh, such a good question, Claudia. I really love this work. I really think that community connections are so important for all things in life, let alone when you live with a chronic illness. So I think that in terms of diabetes work, it's so wonderful to see the beautiful work of Diabetes Canada. There is so much great stuff happening. There's JDRF, which stands for Juvenile Diabetes Research Fund. There's peer support groups. There are clinics like our hospitals running support groups. They're running, you know, ways to foster connection with others who live with diabetes. There's camps for young children. There's diabetes summer camp, right? And there's adventure programs like Connected in Motion that run hikes and overnight camping trips for all ages living with diabetes. It is happening. I think you have to look for it and find what works for you.
Yeah. And we need to do more of that for anyone and any human being. But I feel like what I see from those individuals who are living with diabetes, it really is about finding something that's going to help them on the path to healing. Now, when I say healing, I don't mean heal from the disease, because we know that that's not an option. It's about coping with the disease. So finding things that are going to help you keep your sugar, you know, levels under control, help you stay as healthy as possible, because you want your other organs not to fade away as well. Exercise is key. What options are there right now currently for individuals who, let's say, cannot go to a gym, who can't afford a gym? Do we have programs or, like groups that we can encourage, like walking groups, running groups, whatever the case may be?
This is great stuff. This is community recreation, right? And there actually are diabetes specific exercise programs run through a few hospitals in the GTA or Toronto, right? So I know of a couple, right? There's wonderful programs that you can actually go to for free if you have OHIP. At the hospital, right, in Toronto. So getting those referrals and raising awareness about these programs, I think, is important, just to know they're out there. I often tell people to go to their local community center, right? There's wonderful recreation options run by the city, right? There's so many affordable things, and some centers are free. Some centers, you can get it for free if you call, right? So it's really happening, and there's truly lots out there. I also want to note that I see people creating their own groups. Like, most of my patients have a buddy that they go walking with, or, you know, that person doesn't even need to have diabetes. Sometimes it's better to have someone who doesn't live with the same illness as you. So that flip side too of just creating your own community, I think, is key, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to your patients, I know you do a lot of like group work, individual work. What are some of the mental health situations or issues that might come up when you're trying to help somebody who has diabetes?
Oh, such a good question, Claudia. So diabetes distress, again, is sort of this official term that really validates people's experiences who live with diabetes. So it really just means anxiety, stress, sometimes depression, right? Deep fear of the complications, and that worry, right? That 24/7 having to live with this, checking your sugar all the time, right? Not being able to go to a restaurant with your friends and not think about it, right? Not having a glass of wine sometimes, right? At the end of the day, I think it can be really challenging for people especially if you're newly diagnosed, to just have to continue going out with friends and not being able to participate in the same way. But again, when you learn the skills, you can absolutely manage it both with yourself and with the support of your community.
And one of the things that I'd like to note is that living with diabetes is actually a very healthy way to live, because it's reminding you every day to be active, to eat well and balanced, you know, to maintain your stress level. So I feel like we can change the dialogue a little bit to make it seem like a person with diabetes is no different than you or I. They're just more aware in their day of what they're doing, their level of activity, you know, what they've consumed. So I feel like we should really admire somebody who's forced to take the time to really be aware of what they're eating and how active they are. So we can turn it around and make it a more of a positive diagnosis.
We can, absolutely. And it's a huge motivator for people, right? I think, you know, while a diagnosis is not a fun thing, it can be motivating. And I also see that, like, the resilience of people and the ability to cope through adversity, right? And again, I think it's so important to put the emphasis not just on the individual to do all that, but them and their community, right? To get out there and raise this awareness, like Diabetes Canada is doing with this gala that's coming up is amazing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, the Blue Ribbon Gala. It's being held on April 12th. I'm excited for it because it's a great way to give everybody knowledge and to raise money and to also feel like we are contributing to the health and well-being of people who are diagnosed with diabetes.
Exactly. And again, just that mental health stigma raising awareness piece, just to really, you know, have an evening dedicated to just talking about it, right? Like hearing people's stories. And when you listen to someone's story who lives with a chronic illness of any kind, right? It's so hard to not be empathetic, right? To hear someone struggle every day, right? As someone who doesn't have diabetes, I'm always humbled by just the strength, like young adults, right? Living with this and continuing to go out to eat with their friends and spend time with loved ones and live a full, happy life is absolutely possible.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm really in admiration of this Blue Ribbon Gala that's coming up on April 12th, because I feel like, you know, giving knowledge to people who may not know anything about diabetes, you know, they can maybe spread the word, or maybe it'll come up in a conversation where they'll know somebody who's newly diagnosed or who's been diagnosed for a while. And that's how we can spread the word that there are ways and solutions. One of the things that I wanted to mention was, or wanted to ask you was, the incidence of diabetes among younger individuals, that's on the rise. From what I understood from the reading and the research that I did. And does it differ for somebody, let's say, who's in their 40s and 50s to somebody who's maybe in their late teens, early 20s? Does the treatment differ?
Oh, such a good one again. I think that, again, it just depends, right? So type 1 diagnosis is, I think, most commonly diagnosed before the age of 14. So JDRF, Juvenile Diabetes Research Fund, tells us that the most common age of diagnosis in most populations is between age 10 and 14. That being said, it can happen at any age, right? So yes, the treatment does sort of differ. I think it's very case dependent, like any treatment, right? It's important to understand the whole person. From my perspective as a mental health clinician, I see so many different struggles for our young adult population versus someone maybe in their 40s or 50s, right? Those anxieties and those fears and worries about the future really show up for many young adults living with diabetes, which is, again, why I advocate for therapy and support, right? Mental health support is huge.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I noticed that I have a few clients of my own who are young, early 20s, and have been diagnosed with diabetes. And I feel for them, you know, when they open up with me in a room, although I'm not a therapist by any means, you know, we kind of get intimate in a session, and, you know, they feel excluded, they feel different. And I'm not the best person to, you know, explain why they shouldn't, because that would be, you know, obviously better for you to explain, but they do feel slightly excluded because they feel excluded themselves. Not that friends necessarily exclude, but like you said, you can't maybe go to this restaurant and eat everything that everybody else is eating. Or maybe some people feel that they have to make accommodations to where they're traveling to. And because prior to having the continuous glucose on the arm, people would have to travel with their insulin. Things really have made a difference. Things really have improved. And I think one of the reasons why it's amazing that we have individuals and families like the Orangio Health Foundation putting together this gala to raise awareness, to raise money, and to help individuals live as normal as possible, I think is great work.
Yeah, me too. And it's just lovely to see people turn a difficult situation into one where we can create change, right? Like, as you said, you know, people before insulin pumps and before continuous glucose monitors had to prick their fingers, right? And many people still do who can't afford or don't have access to these technologies. So I think just again, speaking about it and talking about how difficult it is for people while still being resilient is the best thing that people like you and I can do.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any last words of encouragement for individuals who may be living with a diagnosis of diabetes?
Oh, yes. So I think just connect to others. That's my number one piece of advice, is that you are not alone in dealing with this. There are many people who live with diabetes, right? The statistics show that at all ages, right? So it's not just an autoimmune disease for people of a certain demographic. It affects truly everyone in our society. And I think if it doesn't affect you directly, you probably know someone with diabetes, right? So keep talking about it, keep seeking support. Like, I think getting the right support and feeling supported by your healthcare professionals, by your family, by your friends is important.
Mm-hmm. And do you recommend for anybody looking for information, either someone with diabetes or without diabetes, do you recommend visiting diabetescanada.com to find out everything they could possibly know, how to contribute, how to donate, and as well as the gala upcoming on April 12th?
I do. Diabetes Canada is a wealth of information. Yeah, as I mentioned before, like connecting with a local hospital's diabetes clinic is great. Source of information. On the Diabetes Canada website, there's the diabetes guidelines, and those are also excellent. They're so well researched, right? Wealth of knowledge and information. So again, the hopeful part is that the info is also out there. So do it, right? Do the research. Attend this gala at, I believe, the Hazelton Manor in Vaughan on April 12th. And just keep talking and seeking the support that you need.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I can't thank you enough for joining me. We will look forward to the gala on April 12th. And if anyone wants to find me, you can always find me on Instagram at Claudia_Macchiella or my website, claudiamacchiella.com. That's my show for this week. If you missed it, go to 1059theregion.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and of course, Audible. I'm Dr. Claudia. Thank you for listening. I hope this helps you live your best life.
The Wellness Prescription was brought to you by Healthy Planet. Order online at healthyplanetcanada.com or go online to find a location nearest you.